So for today, we'll have shorter prayer. We'll do. So this is the one verse praise of the mother of all Buddhas, Pragyaparamita, the perfection of wisdom. Gate gate, the mantra of Heart Sutra. Bodhiya soaha deyatha gate gate para gate para sangate bodhiya soaha deyatha gate gate para sangate bodhiya soaha. This is homage, verse of homage or salutation from the Abhisamaya Alamkara, ornament for clear realization, which is a praise to the mother of all the Buddhas, Sravakas, Pratyeka Buddhas, and Bodhisattvas. Verses of salutation from Master Nagarjuna's root verses of the middle way called wisdom. Vedela chatse lu. Now we'll say the prayer, the lineage Lama, the Lama prayer of Lamrim. So for both the extensive Lamrim lineage and also the profound Lamrim lineage, profound view lineage, we will have the tune. The magnificent, precious root Lama, please rest above the lotus and moon on my crown and take care of me with great kindness. Bestow upon me the attainments of your holy body, speech, and mind. The teacher, conqueror, gone beyond, and the incomparable guide, venerable, invincible protector Maitreya, the Buddha's regent, exalted Sangha, exalted Asanga. Exalted Asanga, who was prophesied by the victorious one. To you three Buddhas and Buddha and Bodhisattvas, I make request. Vasubandhu, crown ornament of this world's learned ones, Arya Vimuktisena, who found the middle path, Vimuktisena Gomin, with a high rank on faith. To you three who opened the eyes of the world, I make request. Paramasena, who has exalted the marvelous accomplishments, Vinitasena, who purified his mind with a profound path, Verujana, a great treasury of great waves of conduct, to you three, friends of the migratory beings, I make request. Haribhadra, who composed vast treatises on the supreme path of Pragyaparamita. Kosali, holder of all the victorious ones' instructions. Ratnasena, who lovingly cared for all beings. To you three, helmsmen of sentient beings, I make request. Suvarnadvipa, who mastered the bodhicitta. Atisha, holder of the tradition of the great vehicle, precious Dromdenpa, who clarified the noble path, to you three, pillars of the teachings, I make request. The pinnacle of the, and next is the request to this wisdom lineage, the profound wisdom lineage, the profound view. the pinnacle of the Shakyas, supreme guide of peerless speech, Manjushri, total encompassment of victorious one's infinite knowledge, the supreme exalted Nagarjuna, who perceived the meaning of the profound, to you three, crown ornaments of speech, I I make request. Chandrakirti, who clarified the exalted one's thought, Vidyakokila, the elder, his eldest son, Vidyakokila the younger, son of the victorious ones, to you three powerful ones of the lineage I make request. Adisha, holder of the tradition of the great vehicle, who saw a profound dependent arising just as it is, precious Dumpa, who clarified the noble path, to you too, ornaments of this world, I make request. Next is the request to the Kadam Lamrim lineage. Magnificent Gompawa, the powerful yogi, Nizurba, who had stable concentration on the profound, Thakmapa, who upheld the whole collection of Vinaya, to you three, lamps of the border regions, I make request. Namka Senge, who practiced with earnest effort, Namka Gyalpo, who was blessed by the holy ones, Senge Zangbo, who abandoned the 8 worldly concerns, to Gelse Zangbo, I make request. With bodhicitta, seeing all beings as his child, blessed and cared for by the sublime deities, supreme spiritual friend guiding migrators in degenerate times, at the feet of Namgya Gelsen, I make request. So from the Kadam Lamrim lineage down, we'll not have tune chanting, but just recite the prayers. Thangmapa, who upheld the whole collection of Vinaya, to you three lamps of the border regions, I make request. Namka Senke, who practiced with earnest effort, Namka Gyalpo, who was blessed by the holy ones, Senge Zangpo, who abandoned the ill worldly concerns, to Gelse Zangpo, I make request. With bodhicitta, seeing all beings as his child, blessed and cared for by the sublime deities, supreme spiritual friend guiding migrants to generate signs, at the feet of Namka Gyalzen, I make request. Next is Kadam Shungpawa lineage, classic scholastic lineage. The spiritual friend Potowa, representing the lineage of the victorious one, Sharawa, unequaled in discrimination, Chekawa, who fulfilled the bodhicitta. To you three who fulfill the hopes of beings, I make request. Bodhisattva Chirbhuva, possessor of all transmissions and insights, Lungi Wangchuk, supremely learned one, Gompo Rinchen, protector of migrators in the three realms, to you three great elders, I make request. Zhangchenpa, who had the sweet scent of pure morality, Tsonawa, master of 100,000 sections of Vinaya, Muntaba, who reached the limits of the Abhidhamma ocean, to you three guides of migrators, I make request. Having found the profound and the vast Dharma, you became a protector of all fortunate migrators, with good deed developed the doctrine. At the feet of the glorious Guru, Church of Sangpo, I make request. Request to the Kadam Manga lineage, instruction, quintessential instruction lineage. Tsurtimbar, great, powerful, accomplished one, Shunu Wu, who correctly relied on a spiritual friend. Gergompa, who trained his mind to frame in the supreme vehicle path. To you three, sons of the victorious one, I make request. Sangye Wen, holder of a treasure of marvelous qualities, Namka Gyalpo, blessed by the holy ones, Senge Zangpo, who abandoned the old 8 worldly concerns, to Gelse Zangpo, I make request. With bodhicitta, seeing all beings as his child, blessed and cared for by the exalted God, supreme spiritual friend guiding migratory beings in degenerate times, and to Namka Gelsen, I make request. Avalokiteshvara, great treasury of non-objectifying compassion, Manjushri, powerful and stainless wisdom, Tsongkhapa, crowning ornament, crowning jewel of the learned ones of the snowlands, to the feet of Losantagwa, I make request. the great scholar. No, the great scholar, adept, Sherab Senge, omniscient Gendun Drup, the first Dalai Lama, Norbu Zangbo, who attained the three Buddha bodies, I pray to you three glorious masters, Gendun Gyatso, the second Dalai Lama, Kedrup Gelek Belsang, Kedrupje, and scholar adept Lhotun Sunam Belsang, to the three holy masters, I make request. The lotus holder, Sunam Sigyatso, the third Dalai Lama, the upholder of the profound instructions, Chöyth Trebelsang, Sovereign Lord Quentin Benjol Hundup, to you three scholar adepts, I make request. Ngawang Lobsang Gyatso, the fifth Dalai Lama, the kind master Lobsang Chertak, Lobsang Gelsen, the omniscient Jamyang Shepa, Shebe Dorje, to I make request to you. Special spiritual master Jamyang Deve Dorje, incomparable great guaranteed throne holder Ngawang Chogden, the supreme leader Gewang Gesang Gyatso, the seventh Dalai Lama, to you three I make request. Longdul Ngawang Lobsang, the great throne holder Ngawang Nyendak, Banglong Tulku, by the name of Banglong Tulku, by the name of Ngawang Chenzin Longri Wangchuk, Nishi Gyatso, to you all I make request. The regent Dharma Rinchen, the regent of Master Tsongkhapa, Shakya Gelsen, the light of sentient beings, the glorious Dromtun, Tunyu Kedrup, the three illuminators of the doctrine, I make request. Chögyi Gelsen, the leader amongst teachers, Namgwa Gelsen, the great being, Jetsun, the venerable Lobsang Chögyi Gelsen, to the three peerless masters, I make request. Tsundri Gelsen, the lord of realized masters, Damju Gelsen, the captain of sentient beings, Gyele Gyatso, the treasury of every spirit lineage, to the three kind gurus, I make request. Ngawang Jampa, the illuminator of an excellent path, Benjen Belden Yeshe, the emanation of Amitabha, the great tutor of the eighth Dalai Lama, Yeshe Gelsen, to the three illuminators of the path to liberation, I make request. Bearing the name Thugje, the treasury of Tsongkhapa's tradition, his spiritual son, Ngawang Chenzin, crowning jewel of scholars, Yeshe Gyatso, to you three leaders of sentient beings, I make request. I respectfully pray to the consummate tutor, Lobsang Tsultim Chamba Gyatso, who the 13th Dalai Lama's tutor, who upheld the treasure of Tsongkhapa's excellent tradition without a match, the 13th Dalai Lama Ngawang Lobsang Tubten Gyatso, I make request. Like a second lord of sages in the teaching of the Buddha, in the teaching matchless in preserving the scriptural teaching and realizational teachings, and whose triumphant enlightened activities reign over the three worlds, I pray to the venerable master Guru Vajradhara, unity of the three refuges, for those to be tamed, assume the manner of spiritual friends, to all the kind gurus who grant the supreme and common attainments, I make request. Eyes that view all the infinite holy scriptures for this fortunate one, supreme gateway to liberation, using skillful means which are moved by love, to the clarifying spiritual friends, I make request. In all my rebirths, may I never be separated from the perfectly pure lamas, enjoy the glory of Dharma, and completing the qualities of the levels and paths, may I quickly achieve the state of Vajradhara. Blessing for tea. This is having the power, the mastery of the speech, which has qualities of softness, glory, and Vajra, like the intelligent mouse, the good face of intelligence filled with wisdom, holder of the doctrine, ornament of a large, playful ocean. To the exalted supreme holder of lotus, I make offerings. 니탄 이제 최상해. 여러분들까지 이제 최상. 리니지 남아 나라. 리니지 남아 나라. 이 최상이 단다. 거도. 니 베이지 디게. 디 베이지 넘버 티어라. 디 나와 마찬가지. 이 최상해. 디날 티고 사람시 슐 디날 티고 사레 코치스 아 Please take tea. Those who are fat, please take more bread so that you become fatter. Gaudenta Rinpoche and Shabha Choche. That you should eat more bread because you are too skinny. So the people who have newly come from Tibet, you are here in the hall, and of course you will listen carefully, attentively. Of course, everybody will listen very carefully, and I ask you to listen attentively. So did you get Arya text? Shit. So inside Tibet, it's very in a very difficult situation to pursue study of Dharma. And then there are a few teachers also who can teach well. And it's getting very difficult to have more new good scholars, except in very few remote places where there are few good scholars coming up. In general, the Tibetans have this custom of an attitude like the study of Dharma is for the monks and nuns where they have philosophical studies, but apart from that, the lay people and say some kind of a ritual, and they're more or less satisfied with that. They don't have any understanding of understanding of the teachings. So, of course, people consider it quite good if the Westerners, if the lay people are just engaged in their prayers, daily prayers. But that is very a drawback for us. So wherever I give teachings, whether to Chinese, Taiwanese, Vietnamese, Koreans, or any Buddhist countries, I always, and also people from the Theravada countries, Sri Lanka, Thailand, Burma, and so forth, Cambodia, I always ask them to studied Dhamma and become a 21st century Buddhist. So what that means is to understand the Buddha Dharma well. There are many different religious traditions in the world. And all the major religious traditions, of course, have the same practice of love, compassion, contentment. And each of these religious traditions have their own founder teachers as well, and higher beings to whom the followers take actually submit themselves. And Buddha himself has said, "One is the master of one, you are the master of yourself." So the path to enlightenment is something that you have to pursue yourself. It cannot come from someone else, like from a creator God. And so it cannot come as blessing to us. It's like that. And so we have to study the Dharma. And Dharma brothers and sisters from Singapore and also Mongolia, it's very important for you to also to engage in study of the Dharma. This is the basis foundation of all good qualities. The kind and venerable spiritual masters are the foundation of all good qualities, saying that dependence on them is the root of the path. May I rely on them with great respect and continuous effort. Inspire me thus. A human life with leisure is obtained this once. Understanding that it has great value and is hard to find, may I produce unceasingly the mind that takes hold of its essence day and night. Inspire me thus. The fluctuation of our body and life is like a bubble of water. Remember death, for we perish so quickly. After death, the effects of black and white karma pursue us as a shadow follows a body. Finding certainty in this, may I always be careful to abandon even the slightest negative action and to complete the accumulation of virtue. Inspire me thus. There is no satisfaction in enjoying the worldly pleasures. They are the door to all misery, having realized that the fault of samsaric perfections is that they cannot be trusted. May I be strongly intent on the bliss of liberation and inspire me thus. That pure thought to attain liberation produces great conscientiousness, mindfulness, and awareness. May I make the essential practice keeping the vow of individual liberation the root of the doctrine. Inspire me thus. Having seen that all beings, my kind mothers, have fallen like myself in the ocean of cycling existence, may I train in the supreme heart dedicated to enlightenment, assuming the obligation to free all migrating beings. Inspire me thus, generating the dedicated heart alone without cultivation of the three moral practices does not lead to enlightenment. Having realized this, may I practice with intense effort the vows of the conquerors and their spiritual children. Inspire me thus by quieting distraction to false objects and analyzing the meaning of reality. May I quickly generate within my mind stream the path uniting calm, abiding insight. Especially insight, inspire me thus. When trained in the common path, I am a suitable vessel. Let me enter with ease at the great gateway of the fortunate ones, the Vajrayana, the highest of all vehicles. Inspire me thus. The basis of achieving the true powerful attainments is the pure vows and commitments that I have pledged. Having found the true understanding of this, may I keep them even at the cost of my life. Inspire me thus. Having realized the significance of the two stages, which are the essence of the tantric path, may I steadfastly practice without laziness the four sessions of yoga and realize what the holy beings have taught. Inspire me thus. May the spiritual teachers who lead me on the sacred path and all spiritual friends who practice it have long life. May I quickly and completely pacify all outer and inner hindrances. Grant such as inspiration, I pray. In all my rebirths, may I never be separated from the perfect spiritual masters and enjoy the magnificent Dharma. Completing all qualities of the stages and paths, may I quickly achieve the stages of the Vajradhara. Thank you. this ground anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, Mount Meru, four continents, the sun and the moon, I imagine as a Buddha land, an offer to you. May all beings enjoy this in this pure land. Shasta Chöche is making the mandala offering to His Holiness. Shasta Chöche, Venerable Master Lobsang Tenzin. I go for refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly until I'm enlightened. May the merits that I gain from listening to the teaching become cause for me to become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merit created by listening to the Dharma, may I attain the state of Buddhahood in order to benefit all migrators. Also, I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha Dharma and Supreme Assembly. By the virtuous merit created by listening to the Dharma, may I attain the state of Buddha in order to benefit all migrators. Homage to the Gautama, who out of his compassion taught us the holy Dharma to rid us of all views, wrong views. So, with regard to Buddhism in this world, it's been 2,600 years almost, popularly speaking. We have to be very specific, very the real time of the Buddhism having been in the world has to be still checked, how long it has been. So I once saw some inscription of Tara on a rock, and the people, I saw a picture of it, and it was said that it's more than 2,600 years old. And so we have to still check the time when Buddha actually appeared on this earth. In Tibet, according to Sakya Pandita, even at that time, Buddha lived around over 2,000 years. And certain other Tibetan scholars, according to them, it's been 2,900 years since the Buddha appeared in the world. So in any case, Shakyamuni Buddha was a historical Buddha. And so Buddhism is one of the major religions of the world today. Whether a country is a Buddhist country or not, when people talk about Lord Buddha, he is seen as the embodiment of compassion, who taught nonviolence. So this is well known in the world. Then towards the end of the 20th century, the training of mind, which is taught in Buddhism, found in Buddhism very extensively, is found to be very beneficial to calm people's mind. So it's found to be very practical in calming people's mind and bringing peace of mind. And then, similarly, the teaching of dependent origination that is taught in Buddhism is something which is relevant, which can be used to explain any kind of thing, whether external or internal experiences. If you have some understanding, some experience or familiarity with the understanding of dependent origination, then what you can have is you will have a holistic view of the different incidents that happen in the world. You can see that when something happens, it happens due to many different causes and conditions, many different factors. Whereas we usually try to actually find an absolute target on whether it's something good or bad. And then when we find something disturbing what we like, and then we develop anger. And so in this way, because of we also develop attachments by seeing something absolutely beautiful in things and become attached. So because of this view that we have with which we perceive things to have some kind of absolute objective objectivity, so this understanding of dependent origination actually helps make it somber. And so people are taking more interest and in Buddha Dharma based on the understanding of dependent origination, how things are interdependent. And then we have the Pali tradition, the Theravada tradition of Buddhism, which is one of the 18 sub-schools within the Vaibhashika. So it's the name Theravada seems to be related to Vinaya tradition. So they have the practice of, within the Vinaya practice, we have the three practices of bi-monthly confession, then the mountain retreat, and then the conclusion of mountain retreat, and so forth. Of course, there are people who actually misbehave within these traditions as well. And then the Sanskrit tradition spread from India to China, and so this is also called the Mahayana tradition from the point of view of the broad-mindedness of the practitioners. But for the Mahayana practitioners of the Sanskrit tradition, the Pali tradition, what is found in Pali or Theravada tradition is the basis. And then within the teaching of Sanskrit tradition, we have the perfection wisdom teachings, which actually has the teachings of the Four Noble Truths as its foundation, and then expanded on it, the teachings of the Four Noble Truths. And within that context, we have the attitude of bodhicitta, which is this altruistic intention to become a Buddha for the benefit of all sentient beings. So your mind set is rather becomes broader and more. Universal. So we should not actually disregard the Theravada or Pali tradition, thinking that we are Mahayana followers of the Mahayana tradition. We have to actually take the Theravada tradition as a foundation of our practice. And then the Mahayana has been something of a point of contention amongst different scholars. Even at the time of the Master Nagarjuna, there were people who argued that the Mahayana was not the teaching of the Buddha. And so Master Nagarjuna and Bhava Viveka, and they have argued the Mahayana for Mahayana being the teaching of the Buddha. And also we find this argument from in Shantideva's text. And so there were people who said Mahayana wasn't a teaching of the Buddha. And even today we have people who say this. So it's not their fault as such who reject Mahayana as being not being the teaching of the Buddha. Of course, the teachings that are contained in the Pali language were compiled after the passing away of the Buddha. They were written down. But it seems the Sanskrit tradition, the Mahayana teachings were not compiled at that time. So we can see, for example, in the Heart Sutra, discussion between Shariputra and Avalokiteshvara. And of course, at the time of the Buddha, there were these great bodhisattvas, the eight close disciples of the Buddha, Avalokiteshvara, Manjushri, Samandabhadra, Kitigarbha, Akashagarbha, Vajrapani and so forth. So it's clear that there were these deities in the audience of the Buddha when he gave teaching. And so there were people who have access to these deities as well who attend the teaching of the Buddha. And therefore these deities are mentioned in our sutras. So this bodhisattva deities discuss amongst themselves. We can find in the sutras. So when they were having discussion, for example, in the Heart Sutra between Avalokiteshvara and Shariputra, of course, people who can have access to Avalokiteshvara will be able to see that Shariputra was having a discussion with Avalokiteshvara. But for those who have no access to the deities, Avalokiteshvara, for example, and for them, what could actually appear is that Shariputra was could have appeared is that Shariputra was talking to himself. So this is something that's it's possible. One time, one Tibetan went to see my junior tutor Tijang Rinpoche, and he told Tijang Rinpoche that this that when he visited the Chokhang in Lhasa, he couldn't actually see the Zhou Shakyamuni statue where it was supposed to be. And he saw the throne rather empty, and so he requested Dabdjeshan Rinpoche to do something for him. And then there was somebody by the name of Ganyur Lama, who was a very great master, and he gave teachings on Ganyur. And when he was one time giving the the transmission of the Ganyur, the word, translated words of the Buddha in Tibetan, and one time somebody in the audience actually saw the Lama eating meals rather than actually seeing him giving the transmission and reading the text of Ganyur. So these things are something that can happen to people. And then there's the story of Taglung Shabdrung Rinpoche, who came out of Tibet and was in Nepal one time, and then he was giving a transmission of Taglung Gaju teachings to Gyabje Degu Khinzhe Rinpoche. And at one time when he was giving one of the transmissions, Taglung Shabdrung Rinpoche actually told me that personally that he saw the lineage, all the entire lineage lama of that particular teaching that he was given on that day to Degu Khyentse Rinpoche on the beam of the monastery where he was giving Degu Khyentse Rinpoche's monastery where he was giving these teachings. So Taglung Shabdrung Rinpoche was someone who need not be concerned about name or anything like that. He actually was he suffered so much in Chinese gulags, and then he came out of that, and then there was nothing he could actually expect from me as well by telling me this story, thinking that I will not. So Taglung Shabdrung Rinpoche may not also have thought to deceive me either. I don't think he had that intention at all. And so and then one time I saw one American, and this person told me that he to have clairvoyance, reading someone else's mind. And so I asked him what kind of thought I have. And at that point, I set up my mind with some thought and some thought in my mind, and then asked him what I was thinking. And then he said something. Of course, he was totally wrong. So I wouldn't listen to everything that people tell me. I wouldn't really believe right away, just like that. So of course I would not listen and believe everyone for saying anything they say. And so Taglung Shabdrung Rinpoche was telling me his story of having that vision of so when we were having a meal together. And so these things, the vision can actually happen to people. Yesterday, when we had when we read through the biography of Atisha, some people might think, "Oh, perhaps these are something having visions of deity and so forth, or something that happened in the past." But it's doubtful that this can happen today. So, during the Kala Chakra initiation this past winter, the first Dalai Lama and also the Master Tsongkhapa, for example, had visions of the deities. For example, the Master Tsongkhapa had visions of Manjushri and had dialogue and discussions on difficult the Dharma. So these are things that happen to people. And then the first Dalai Lama had the vision of the white Tara, and the green Tara and so forth. And accordingly, when he had the vision of white Tara, he wrote a praise to the white Tara. And then the second Dalai Lama, Gedun Gyatso, also, since his childhood, had visions of deities. And then also the fourth Dalai Lama. And so all these different previous Dalai Lamas and down to the 13th Dalai Lama had visions of different deities. And then the fifth Dalai Lama also had visions of deities. And which are compiled in what are known as the 25 sealed secret visionary teachings. So all the previous Dalai Lamas had visions of deities, and the only Dalai Lama who has no vision at all of deities is me. But I usually tell joke to people saying that although I have no visions of deities, but I am the most famous Dalai Lama. So this is not something that I actually can take the credit myself, but because of the turmoil that we went through as Tibetans, the Tibetan nation, and people became fond of me. So we should not be narrow-minded saying that what we know is the only truth and reality, and there's nothing else which is true. Like even today's scientists do not claim to know everything. Whatever they see is right, and whatever they don't see is not true or reality. They don't say this. So with scientists, I discuss about the mind and emotions and how to transform our negative emotions. And when they use these instructions, the practices based on the mind, and of course they find it very beneficial. And then through their analysis and experiments, some scientists even say perhaps past and future lives are possible. So in Buddhism also, we use logic to infer things which are not accessible directly to our senses. But then, finally, we have to get back to direct perception and experience. And so the inferential cognition finally has to be developed into direct valid cognition and real experience within ourselves. And so today, people who are thinkers and who actually like reasoning and logic, they say that the Buddhism is something that we can actually, it's a tradition we can actually, in which we can do analysis and investigation. And so what I was trying to say was that those who say that Mahayana is not teaching of the Buddha say that because they were not written down at the time when they were being compiled by the Arhats in those days. And then similarly, people say that the Tantra in Buddhism is not also teaching of the Buddha. So we cannot just try to say that these Mahayana and Tantra were taught by the Buddha without giving any reason. We cannot resort only to scriptural quotations. But we have to actually investigate. It's very important to do that. So when we check the Four Noble Truths, where the true cessation is taught, so the ultimate cessation is nirvana, or liberation from samsara. So when we look at the reason to prove this possibility, then as we find in Dharmakirti's Pramana Vartika, There are so many reasons that are given, and then these reasonings give us a very fresh look at the possibility of to prove that that the liberation is possible. And otherwise, in Pali tradition, they don't have much reasoning and logic they use to prove it. So as Nagarjuna says, but, where emptiness is feasible, there everything is feasible. Where emptiness is not feasible, there everything is not also not feasible. And so there, when Master Chandrakirti comments on that verse, he actually gives very good reasoning, to which actually gives us very deep conviction that the cessation, nirvana, are possible. And so it's very uncomfortable, very inconvenient to see that once someone becomes an anahat and he dies in that life, nothing else remains of that person, and not even the mind. There's no real good reason and logic to support that. So we have to understand the presentation of the system of how someone can attain the four Buddha bodies. And therefore, without accepting the four Buddha bodies that are taught in the in Mahayana, it is very difficult to and together with the enlightened activities of the Buddha, then we cannot have a complete understanding of consummate Nirmanakaya form of the Buddha, a supreme emanation form of a Buddha. Now, in order to attain Buddhahood, without us, without there being the seed for that, the seed or substantial cause for that, it's very difficult to actually attain it. And then we have in Tantra, there's description of attaining Buddhism, Buddhahood, on the basis of based on the subtle luminous mind. As Jamyang Sheba said, although in the sutra the main object emptiness is shown, the supreme subjective mind, the luminous mind, is not taught, and all and also, although in Sutrayana, main obstructing factor for omniscience is taught, the cognitive obscuration, but then the subtle clear light mind is not shown there, and therefore we can also see that the difference in the profundity of the sutra and tantra, and understanding these profundity of tantra, we can also see the possibility of omniscience and cessation and all that. And therefore, we have the great masters like Nagarjuna and his spiritual disciples who have actually used the human intelligence to investigate the teaching of the Buddha. And he was not just someone who believed others, taking for granted whatever others say. He was not someone who is of dull faculty, believing just on blind faith. So he was a very intelligent and bright person who actually checked the teaching of the Buddha. And Chandrakirti says, like this, those teachings of the Buddha, which are not taken to be, which cannot be taken literally, are interpreted as provisional teachings. And so within the teaching of the Buddha, these masters, Nagarjuna, Chandrakirti, and so forth, actually made this division into the definitive and the provisional teachings. And so they really make the points of the Buddha's teachings very clear to us based on reason and logic. And so when we find these reasonings and when we can actually see the reason and confirm the truth about the teaching of the Buddha, we can say, oh, there is really some reason there. So one time I attended the global Buddhist congregation. At a meeting of, and I said that if we compare Nagarjuna, if we compare modern scholars with Nagarjuna, Nagarjuna lived about 400 years after the Buddha's passing away, but today's scholars are far removed from the time of the Buddha. 2000, we are now 2,000, almost 2,500 plus years after the Buddha. So Nagarjuna was an Indian, so he could have been more familiar with the Indian history, being an Indian. And Nagarjuna wasn't someone who was like a foolish person, a stupid one, just believing anyone. So he wouldn't take things, even the teaching of the Buddha, for granted, through believing them through blind faith. So there are people who say today that many of the sutras that we find today were not actually taught by the Buddha, but they were actually written by later scholars. There may be few texts that were written by other scholars, but not all of them were just their concoctions. So Buddha, within Buddhism, we have the Tantra, and then within tantric practices such as the vast breath and the tomo, mystic heat of the body, and then also the dissolution of white and red bodhicittas in the body. And these practices are even there in the non-Buddhist traditions as well. I have met with non-Buddhists with whom I had discussions. And so they also have the projection of the mind out of the body and transference of it into another's body, a fresh, uninjured body. So these are there in non-Buddhist tantra. The non-Buddhists also have tantra. But Buddhist tantra, if we really think about it, on the basis of these reasonings given by Nagarjuna and so forth, and so the monks, you actually don't pay attention to these things much. And when you meet someone who says, "Oh, this tantra is not even Buddhism," I mean, it wouldn't be good for you just to say, "Oh, that's a really bad thing you are saying," and not being able to actually prove to them that tantra is something that the Buddha taught. So we can base on the treatises written by past masters and then use our own mind and to intelligence to see the reason for this. And so it's very important to see the fact that Mahayana and Tantra are the teaching of the Buddha. So some of you already know, but many of you may not know this. There was one Indian master, Sanskrit master, Sanskrit scholar Upadhyaya, and from Varanasi. And one time he went to research on
the Vimala Prabha commentary of Kalachakra, and for that he went to Nepal several times. And one day when I met him, he told me that one time when he went to Nepal to do his research, he found one palm leaf manuscript, a single palm leaf folio, on which is written some Sanskrit, some tantric stuff in Sanskrit. And then the style of writing on that palm leaf, the Sanskrit style of writing, he said he could confirm that it was written, and the style of writing was that of the author of the 400 stanzas of. So he said that he could confirm from this folio, the style of writing on this single palm leaf folio, that it was written by Aryadeva, who wrote the 400 verses. So this is this could be considered as one reason using the style of writing of Aryadeva, who wrote the 400 verses, confirming that the tantric text, the single folio, also was written by the same author, confirms that Aryadeva actually practiced Tantra. And if that is the case, then we can also say that his master, Aryadeva's master, the master Nagarjuna, also practiced Tantra. And then Aryadeva has also written this Charya Melapaka of Guhyasamaja Tantra. It's a commentary. And so we can use these reasonings to prove that Aryadeva and the great Buddhist masters actually practiced Tantra. So many of you may have heard this story now. Sometime in 1960s or 70s, I received a letter from Bombay, from an organization in Bombay, in which it said that amongst the Tibetan Buddhist practitioners, there were some who could actually show miracles, and asked me to introduce such people. And at that time, my officers asked me how they should respond. Of course, we didn't reply, but in this way. But I said to them, "Of course, there are such people. In general, we could have such people, but then they are yet to be born." So we have thousands or tens, over 10,000 students who study philosophy in our communities. So in all the Buddhist traditions of Tibet, we have these. I have an American friend who is a good practitioner, and he could now stay in single-pointed concentration for about 4 hours at a stretch. And an American also has started meditation centers in Thailand, in America, and also in Bangalore. So these centers are focusing on cultivating single-pointed concentration. So there are people who, even today, who have such experience of being able to stay in single-pointed concentration for 4 hours at a stretch. So last year we had some talk about setting up some meditation huts or meditation places for in the in these monastic institutions here, Depung Gomang, and has actually started this project. So when we set up these meditation centers in our monastic institutions, it's not about just trying to sit there in a retreat or anything like that, but to actually cultivate single-pointed concentration, which special insight focusing on developing special insight focusing on emptiness. So I had a discussion with someone asked me to actually start a project in his monastery where when they have prayer sessions, they would set some time aside for just silent meditation in between. This was there in Pabongka Rinpoche had such a tradition in his place. When they were saying some prayer, they in the middle of the prayers, they would stop and then just meditate. So this tradition was there even before 1959 in Sai Tibet. So it's very important for us actually to practice the Dharma after having studied them. Otherwise, after having earned the Geshe degree, if you go to other places and to and become business people, it's not really good. Of course, if you do teach others with a very sincere motivation and dedication, then of course it's good. But if we could have, as Jared Jamdunba said, while I was listening or studying, I also reflected and meditated. When I reflected, I also studied and meditated. And when I meditated, I also studied and reflected on the teachings. So I've heard people from I've heard some Geshe's telling me that while they were studying in their monastic institutions, they were also pursuing meditation privately. And so it's very important for us to combine study, meditation, and contemplation of whatever we are studying, the Dharma. So the teaching, so in order to practice this Buddha Dharma that we have, that complete teaching of the Buddha comprising Vinaya, Hinayana, Mahayana, and Tantric teaching, and then the teaching that we are going to have is the teaching of the Buddha, which comprises which is the complete stages of the path to enlightenment, the great treatise and the middle length. Now, how the student relies upon the teacher. How the student relies upon the teacher, one who has these qualifications. Page 77 of a suitable recipient of the teachings should investigate well whether a guru has the requisite characteristics as explained above. So I always tell the Westerners or foreigners who listen to Tibetan teachers that they when they start listening to some lama or some teachers, they should not regard that person right away as their spiritual guru, but they should in fact examine the person and see whether they actually and have the qualifications of a true teacher or not. Until one they actually could confirm, until they could actually find them to be qualified, they should. There is nothing wrong in considering those people that they go for to listen to their teachings as their friends in the Dharma. And Sakya Pandita has said that people, when they engage in dealings, business dealings, such as buying horses and so forth, and jewels and so forth, they actually check the quality of these things very carefully. But when it comes to the Dharma, they actually neglect to do this kind of analysis and examination. So right from the beginning, you have to be very careful not to make the mistake and of taking someone as your spiritual guru and then later finding faults and then losing your faith and creating grave negative karmas. So before considering someone as one's own spiritual guru, you should examine them. And then when you find them to be qualified, you should consider them as your gurus. And therefore, it says here to investigate well whether a guru has the requisite characteristics as explained above. Then this student should receive the teachings, kind words from a qualified teacher. Even so, biographies of Geshe Drumtenpa and Tsongkhapa are not in accord with each other. Tsongkhapa had many gurus and listened to any correct explanation. Thus, when coming from Kham, he even listened to a lay practitioner explaining the teachings alongside the road. His disciple said that this was an inappropriate way to receive the teachings, to which he replied, "Do not say that. I have received two benefits." Geshe Drumtenpa had few gurus, not more than five. So that paragraph is done. Therefore, you should have few teachers. In general, a teacher is someone from whom you have received teachings, kind words, specifically a teacher Teacher is someone who skillfully guides you with instructions of all the paths in their entirety. Page number 78, how to rely in thought, which has three parts to it. A general indication of the attitudes needed to rely on the teacher, in particular, trading in faith, the root. And number three, remembering the teacher's kindness and being respectful. So with regard to number one, general indication of the attitudes needed to rely on the teacher, the Array of Stalks Sutra, Gandhavaduya Sutra states that you should respect and serve the teacher with nine attitudes. This includes the key points of all the attitudes that you should have in order to rely on the teacher. So most of the writings of Lama Tsongkhapa have to do with the general presentation of the Dharma to lead disciples in a gradual process. In the 50s, perhaps, there was a great master named Nyingun Tsongkhapa, who was a student of Lama Jambel Rebe Dorje. He makes this distinction between the teachings that are meant for, called in general, to disciples in general, and then there are teachings which are meant for very specific disciples. So the sutra teachings, and then the writings of Nagarjuna, such as the Mula Madhyamaka Karika and so forth, have to do with the first category of teachings. Presenting the general presentation of the teachings. Then in Charya Milapaka of an Aryadeva, he makes these three distinctions within the teaching of the Buddha. Those who like the celibacy, showing the Vinaya practices, and then for the profound, those who prefer the profound teachings, and the emptiness, and then those of the tantric teachings. And so The tantric teachings were not given by the Vajradhara to everyone in common. But there are certain tantras which were taught to the audience or disciples with the Buddha in the form of a celibate monk. But the rest other tantric teachings were given to certain specific disciples who had a very special imprints and karmic connections and so forth with certain deities, and these could be teachings which were specific to such disciples. And then there are there could be masters who can actually give teachings to a very matured disciples who could be led in through the swift path, like and so we have these two distinct way of leading disciples, in the general way of leading the disciples. So we page 79, how to assume the responsibilities. Paragraph 1. This itself consists of six attitudes. The first, an attitude like the foothill, means that any suffering that might arise does not sway you. When Changaba was staying in Rukpa, Gompa Yuntin Bar, was health declined due to great cold. He then sought the advice of the Venerable Shunutak as to whether he should leave. Shunutak replied, "We have stayed many times in Indra's palace, a comfortable residence with good material necessities. Only today do you have the experience of relying on a Mahayana teacher and listening to the teachings. Therefore, stay where you are, as is proper." The second, an attitude like a worldly servant, means to perform even the worst tasks in their entirety without wavering. For example, the scholar Atisha and all his translators had to stay in Tsang in an area of sewage and mud. Geshe Dumdenpa took off all his clothes and cleaned up the filth. He covered the area with dry white earth from where no one knows. He even built a stone and earth mandala in front of the elder Atisha. Therefore, the elder exclaimed, "Are I had one like you in India. I had one like you in India too." The third, an attitude like a sweeper, means to eliminate completely all pride and feelings of superiority, and consider yourself to be lower than your guru. As Geshe Dromtempa said, "The water of good qualities does not collect all the heights of pride." And as Changawa said, "In the planting time of spring," now look at the weather. Look at whether the green growth comes from the high mountain peaks or from the low valleys. The fourth, an attitude like the foundation, means to take on even the high, heavy responsibilities of the most urgent activities of your guru with pleasure. And next is in particular the general presentation of how you rely on a great master in thought. So first you should rely on a qualified master and then follow him or her, and you give your all your wishes for yourself alone, and give yourself in to submit yourself to the guru, and you should have faith, a single-pointed faith in the guru. You should have the single-pointed faith through reason it should be reason-based and not just blind faith. So the formula of the three jewels blades, faith is the prerequisite of all good qualities, a procreator of them, like a mother who then protects and increases them. It clears away doubts, frees you from the four rivers of ignorance, attachment, craving, and wrong view, and establishes you in the prosperous city of happiness and goodness. Faith cuts through gloom and clarifies the mind. It eliminates pride and is the root of respect. It is a jewel and a treasure, like hands. It is the basis of gathering virtue. It is the best of feet for going to liberation. Also, the Ten Teaching Sutra states, faith is the best of vehicles, definitely delivering you into Buddhahood. Therefore, persons of intelligence rely on the guidance and faith. Virtue will not arise in people who have no faith. Just as green sprouts do not. So just as it is said in Visamaya Alamkara, seeing the Buddha with faith and so forth. So with regard to the Lamrim, this is written with someone in mind who would later train in the tantric practice, and especially in Lamrim, there is this emphasis on seeing the Lama, viewing the Lama as the actual Buddha, and so that has to do with the Guru Yoga practice related with Tantra. So it's not the case that what is said in Lamrim with regard to looking at the Lama as one's own guru, as a Buddha. It's not said with someone who would train only in the practices pertaining to the beings with small scope and mind. But someone who actually has this intention to do tantric practice later on to lead them to Buddhahood, with such a person in mind, the teachings are given in Lamrim. So the Ratantra bestowing initiation of Vajrapani is keep the master's good qualities in mind, never seize upon their faults. Keeping their good qualities in mind, you will reach attainments. Seizing upon their faults, you will not. So your guru might have good qualities for the most part and have only slight faults. If you examine your guru for those faults, this will block your own attainments. Whereas even in the case of a guru who mostly has faults, you will give rise to your own attainments. If you train in faith by focusing on the good qualities while not looking for the faults. So with regard to reliance on one's guru, and it is found a very profound explanation and also meditation, a series of meditation on it in the liberation in the palm of your hands. There's great detailed explanation. So there are the reasons for Lama you should see the reasons for looking at Lama as the actual Buddha, and how you have the potential to do so, and then how you actually view Guru as an actual Buddha. So 82, paragraph 2.
Thus, it is similar to the following example. The great elder had the Madhyamaka view, and Sadlinga held the view of true expectorian Chittamatran. Therefore, Adisha's view was superior to that of Sadlinga. Still, Adisha upheld Sadlinga as the guru who was unrivaled amongst his gurus. Because Adisha had obtained the spirit of enlightenment and a general presentation of the stages of the Mahayana path in dependence upon him, reflect on your guru's good qualities and do not look for their faults. You must not discriminate among your gurus, beginning with those from whom you have received one verse, even if they have such defects as faulty ethical discipline. For the cloud of Jewel Sutra states, when you rely on the guru, your virtue increases and your non-virtue increases. Understanding this, develop the idea that your abbot is the teacher, whether he or she is greatly or slightly learned and is knowledgeable or not, or has kept ethical discipline or faulty discipline, and so forth. Also, the question of householder Ugra Sutra state says, O householder, some bodhisattvas strive diligently at receiving oral and transmission of teaching and doing recitation. They might have masters from whom they have heard teachings, obtained oral transmission, or absorbed a verse of four lines that contains a teaching on generosity, ethical discipline, patience, joyous perseverance, meditative civilization, and wisdom, or the accumulation of collections of the bodhisattva path. They should respect them. So remembering the kindness of the being, kindness and being respectful. So this has the connection with thinking about the kindness of the guru and seeing the guru's qualities. You develop faith in him. So the 10th teaching sutra say on page number 83, develop the following ideas with respect to your teacher. I have wandered for a long time through cycling existence, and they teach this and they search for me. I have been a thief, having been obscured by delusion for a long time, and they wake me. They pull me out of the depths of the ocean of existence. I have entered a bad path, and they reveal the good path to me. They release me from being bound in the prison of existence. I have been worn out by illness for a long time, and they are my doctors. They are the rain clouds that put out my blazing fire of attachment and the like. Also, the array of stock sutra says that the youthful Sudana and so forth. So recollect your teacher's kindness in accordance with this statement. Personalize it by replacing they with these teachers in all of the phrases describing the teacher's kindness. Then picture before you your teachers saying the sutra words out loud. Concentrate one-pointedly on their meaning. In this same way, substitute these words in the former sutra, the 10 teaching sutra as well. Furthermore, the array of stock sutra says, O I, Sudana, have come here thinking one-pointedly. These are my teachers. Instructors in these teachings, the ones who totally reveal the good qualities of all things and then fully teach the bodhisattva way of life. Because of giving birth to these qualities in me, they are like my mother. Because of giving me the milk of good qualities, they are like my vet nurses. They thoroughly train me in the branches of enlightenment. These teachers turn away agents of harm. Like doctors, they free me from old age and so forth. And now next is how to rely in practice. So when we actually meditate, we first visualize the teacher to do the practice of purification and accumulation of merit. And so you have to visualize your gurus from whom, the root guru and your main deity, main gurus from whom you have received teachings, and then other gurus should be seen as the emanation of the root guru. So, in order to tame me, you should think, in order to tame me, you, my root guru, have actually appeared, and you are appearing in all these different aspects and forms, and feel the kindness of the guru,
Root Guru, and also the rest of the gurus from whom you have received the teachings directly as emanation of that Root Guru, and then think about the benefits of relying and the disadvantages of not relying on the guru, and then conclude that you will rely on the teacher, and you should feel that you are not mistaken in doing that, and then you should go about with relying through in thought, and then also by thinking that the disadvantages of relying on the teacher, and you should have this decision to conclude that you will rely on the guru, and so think about the kindness, the qualities of the guru, and feel faith. And although the guru, in terms of his knowledge and qualities, may be equal to all the Buddhas, but in terms of his kindness to me, he is greater than all the Buddhas of the three times. And so, just as it is said in Lama Chepa, so Buddha himself actually appeared in India and led all numerous beings to arhat shape, and then Bodhisattva paths and grounds and Buddhahood and so forth. And then many Mahasiddhas of India appeared, such as Nagarjuna, such as the seven successors to the Buddha, and then the 80 Mahasiddhas and so forth have appeared in this world. So when you think about these things, because you find that because of your very feeble positive karma, we have not been able to have access to these great masters of the past. So we are now at a time when Buddha, at a time which is over nearly 2,600 years after the Buddha appeared in the world. So today, leave alone the other things. But if we look at Nalanda, it is just in ruins today. And Takshashila also is in ruins. But Master Shantarakshita came to Tibet and established Buddhism in Tibet, and due to thanks to him and the great masters of India and Tibet, we have the Buddhism that we... So the past masters, we couldn't have access to them, we couldn't meet them. We are in such a... a time where we can only resort to our own root guru, with whom we have direct dharma connection. So, without this, you should think that without having this guru, how could I actually have met with the dharma? When you think about the great bodhisattvas on the bodhisattva levels or grounds. Of course, they actually seem to be very far from us. So we have the gurus with whom we have direct dharma connection to have access to the dharma. And this also it's also a fact that because the gurus appear in the form of ordinary beings to us, we have this access to them. And so appearing in ordinary form doesn't mean that lamas have such and such physical features or not, but it has to do with the qualities of the mind. So ordinary and Arya beings are not differentiated on the basis of physical appearance, but the ordinary appearance or assuming the ordinary appearance means that the gurus actually exhibit to us to have the different negative emotions that we have, and therefore beginning with teaching us alphabet and also giving the monastic vows and then bodhisattva and tantric vows. So we have access to these thanks to our gurus whom we with whom we have this direct connection in Dharma. So Gongdang Tenpo Dreme has said it's very difficult to find such an opportunity where we have the access to the Dharma, that therefore we have to feel how fortunate we are having the gurus. So while we have this opportunity of meeting with the gurus and receiving the teachings and so forth, and have the opportunity to practice the Dharma, unless we do some practice, and we cannot actually make any difference. So we, of course, so we have the teaching of the Four Noble Truths, and we have to think about these teachings and actually try to gain certitude in ourselves. Of course, it's not enough just to be able to win in a debate just in words. And so it's a sad situation if we are not able to make some difference in this life, having found this opportunity to interact with gurus. And so we should have faith, develop faith in the guru, and then develop feeling kindness of the guru, and rely on the teacher in thoughts and deeds. So how to rely in practice? Asava Ghosh's 50 verses on the guru says, what need is there to say much here? Do whatever pleases your gurus. Eliminate all that pleases them. Analyzing this, strive at it. Once you have understood Vajradhara's statement, attainments follow proper reliance on the master. Thoroughly please your gurus in all things. In brief, you must strive to achieve what pleases your gurus and eliminate what pleases them. Displeases them. The three avenues to achieving what pleases your gurus are offering material gifts, respecting and serving with body and speech, and practicing in accordance with their words. This is also stated in Maitreya's ornament for the Mahayana Sutra. Rely on the teacher by way of respect, material things, service, and practice. And also, a steadfast person who practices just as taught by the guru pleases that guru properly. Offering material gifts, the so Sharava says, so he says, furthermore, the student's perspective differs from the guru's perspective. The student, students must do this offering because the gurus are the supreme field through which the student accumulates the collection of merits and sublime wisdom. However, the gurus must not take the gifts into consideration. Sharava said, we use the word guru for whatever is pleased by practice and for whomever is pleased with by practice and does not give even the slightest consideration to material gifts. And with respect to practicing according to the guru's words, Master Tsongkhapa raises this question. We must practice in accordance with the guru and so forth. So it's not only enough to decide by the guru through one's seeing with pure vision, but we have to actually check the guru from the standpoint of the general structure of the Buddha, Buddhism. So the reply, in reply, Lama Tsongkhapa says, with respect to this Gunaprabha Sutra on the discipline states, if the abbot instructs you to do what is not in accord with the teachings, refuse. So when it comes to the general structure of Buddhism, this is what how you should go about. Also, the Clouds of Jewels Sutra says, with respect to virtue, act in accord with the guru's words, but do not act in accord with the guru's words with respect to non-virtue. Therefore, you must not listen to non-virtuous instructions. The 12th birth story clearly gives the meaning of not engaging in what is improper. So if something that the Lama tells you is against the intent of the Buddha, or it actually is a disgrace to the Dharma and not in accord with the convention in the land, then you have to see the pros and cons of what the Lama tells you to do or not. Sometimes when the purpose is greater than the cons, then the pros is cons, then the greater than cons, then you should, of course, consider doing what the Lama instructs. And then even in Vinaya, the Buddha has sometimes prohibited some practices, while at other times then he actually allows the monks to do them, and sometimes allows something in the earlier, but then later he says he actually prohibits them to do them. And so these are in accord with the reality that the Buddha actually gave these teachings. And so it's as I said yesterday, Vasubandhu's students, Vasubandhu commented or interpreted Abhisamaya Alamkara according to Chittamatra view, but Vimuktisena, his own student, actually interpreted it into Mahayana philosophy. And then Serlingpa, the master of Atisha, it is even said that sometimes Lama Salingpa was telling Atisha that your view looks like a nihilism. So philosophically you may differ, but then because of that you must not show disrespect to your guru. And Ornament of Mahayana Sutra states, by gaining a share of your guru's teachings, you rely on the teachers in order to possess good qualities, not for material things. Bodhava said, when Ananda was appointed as the teacher's attendant, he thought of future followers of the teaching and then made the following vow: I will serve and respect the teacher under the conditions that I am not allowed to keep his unused robes or eat his leftover food, and that I am free to be with him at any time. We present-day followers do not value the teaching at all, but only value the guru's assigning status to us as demonstrated by each cup of tea that the guru gives to us. This is a sign of our deep corruption. Then the next, the benefits of relying on the teacher. By relying on a teacher, you will come closer to Buddhahood, you will please the conquerors, you will not be bereft of future teachings, you will not fall into miserable realms, neither bad karma nor afflictions will overpower you. Through mindfulness of the bodhisattva deeds and by not contradicting them, your collection of good qualities will continue to increase, and you will reach all of your provisional and final goals. After obtaining virtue through serving and respecting the teacher with thought and practice, in thought and practice, there you will accomplish others' welfare as well as your own and complete the collections of merit and sublime wisdom. In that vein, the Aryastock Sutra says, child of good lineage, bodhisattvas whom teachers properly support you do not fall into miserable realms. Bodhisattvas whom teachers take into consideration do not contradict the bodhisattva training. Bodhisattvas for whom teachers care are elevated above the world. Bodhisattvas who had served the respected and respected their teachers act without forgetting any of the bodhisattva deeds. Bodhisattvas whom teachers fully look after are not overcome by bad karma or afflictions. And another quotation from that sutra. And then next is and also the sutra showing the Tathagata's inconceivable secret says, quotation from there. And after that, furthermore, by respecting and serving your teacher, you exhaust karma, whose effects you would otherwise experience in the miserable realms. Your action of serving the teacher expands these expends these miserable effects and replaces them with only slight harm to your body and mind in this lifetime, either in actuality or in dreams. In addition, the benefits of respecting and serving your teachers are tremendous, such as a collection of virtue which surpasses even the roots of virtue that you derive from making offerings to limitless Buddhas and so on. As the Sutra of Kritigarbha says, those whom the teachers care for will purify the karma that would otherwise cause them to wander through the miserable realms for 10 million limitless eons. They purify this karma by harming their with harm to their bodies and minds in this lifetime. This harm includes sickness such as an infectious disease with fever and calamities such as famine. They may purify their karma by merely undergoing something as little as a dream or a scolding. They produce more roots of virtue in one morning than those who give gifts, worship, or observe precepts for limitless tens of millions of Buddhas. Those who respect and serve their gurus are endowed with unimaginable good qualities. And also, notice that all of the Buddha's immeasurable good qualities of transforming others' minds arise from this proper reliance on the teacher. Therefore, rely on, become close, and serve and venerate the guru, just as you would the Buddhas. And the Garland of Birth story states, any intelligent person should not be distant from excellent beings. Those and should rely on these virtuous beings in a disciplined manner. Once you are close to them, particles of their good qualities will stick to you automatically. Bodhova says, for the most part, we are in great danger of becoming like a worm, an animal, worn animal skin, just as when you drag a worn animal skin over the ground, debris stick, but gold coins do not. So it is that if you rely on teachers only occasionally, their good qualities do not stick to you, but each slight fault does. Therefore, to be successful, rely continuously on your teachers. The faults of not relying on the teacher, if you have taken someone as your teacher and then your method of reliance is wrong, not only will you be harmed by much madness and sickness in this lifetime, but in future lifetimes as well. You will experience immeasurable suffering in miserable realms for an immeasurable period of time. The Tantra bestowing initiation of Vajrapani states, Bhagavan, what sort of fruition is there for those who reproach their masters? The Bhagavan answered, Vajrapani, do not ask this question, for the answer will frighten the world, including the deities. However, Lord of Secrets, I will say something. O hero, listen carefully. As I have explained, any of the unbearable hells resulting from such karma as the deeds of immediate retribution are said to be the abode of those who reproach their teachers. They must stay there for limited eons. Therefore, never reproach your master on any occasion. Also, the 50 verses of Guru states these lines. And also citation from the commentary on difficult points of Black Ant, Enemy of Yama, composed by the great adept Ratnakara Shanti, states someone who hears even a single verse and does not conceive and so forth. Read through, please. The person who relies on the unbearable will have faults as a result, just as unsmeared arrows are tainted when arrows smeared with poison are placed in the same quiver. By relying on non-virtuous teachers, your previously existing wrongdoings, deeds wrong by nature and deeds wrong by prohibition, does not diminish, and new wrongdoings increases, Jomtempa said. The worst person, though keeping good company, does not become better than middling. The best, by keeping company with the worst, readily becomes part of the worst. A summary of the meaning of the previous five parts.
Lama
So you have to think about, reflect on the advantage of lying on the guru and disadvantage of not lying on the guru. So it says that after you have understood the benefits and faults, as previously explained, reflect on them repeatedly. And the page number 92 finished. The way the student relies on the virtuous spiritual guru. Thus, someone endowed with the characteristics of a vessel should examine in this way, explained above, whether or not a teacher has the characteristics, and if he does have them, obtain the kindness of the Dharma from him. With regard to the manner of relying on spiritual teacher, from whom in general you obtain a dharma, you kindly obtain the dharma, and who in particular guides your mind well by means of perfectly complete instructions, there are 2 points. The manner of relying on in thought, and the root training in faith. The jewel blaze Dharani says, faith, a preparatory practice, gives right birth like a mother. All good qualities guard them and makes them increase. This says that faith gives birth to positive qualities that have not yet arisen, and once they have come into existence, it sustains and increases them. In the Sutra of the 10 Dharmas, teachings, it also says that which leads to definite emergence, faith is the foremost of the vehicles. For that reason, the intelligent rely on the pursuit of faith. In terms of the forward and reverse variations, faith is said to be the foundation of all positive qualities. Generally speaking, there are many types of faith in the 3 jewels. In the actions and their effects and the 4 Noble Truths, however, here it is faith in the spiritual masters. Furthermore, as for the way to see the spiritual master, it says the Tantra, in the Tantra bestowing the initiation of Vajrapani, or lots of sacred, how should a student see his master? Just like he would see the Buddha Bhagwan. Similar statements can be found in the collection of Mahayana Sutras in the Vinaya. And in the Vinaya, the meaning is this: if you understand that someone is like a Buddha, instead of a mind conceiving faults in them, a mind thinking about his positive qualities will arise. Likewise, his regard to spiritual master, you should purposely abandon any concepts of faults in every respect while training in the mind that conceives positive qualities. In addition, the above Tantra says, apprehend your master's positive qualities. Do not ever apprehend his faults. Apprehending his faults, good qualities, you'll gain siddhis. Apprehending his faults, you cannot gain. And then next topic is the remembering his kindness so as to generate respect. There are quotations from 2 sutras, the Sutra of the 10 Dharmas and a Ray of Stock Sutra. So the thoughts expressed here should be remembered through tune to go with the verses, substituting oneself for such sudhana. Then next is the manner of relying through actions. The 50 stanzas of Guru devotion says, what need is there to say a lot of words here? Do everything to make your guru happy, and so forth. And in brief, try hard to please him and to give up whatever he does not like. The 3 means of pleasing Guru are offering him material things, serving him and paying him respect with body, speech and mind, and practicing in accordance with his advice. In this regard, it says in the ornament of the Mahayana Sutra, through homage offering purely obtained, offerings purely obtained in service and practice, you should rely on a spiritual friend. This has 3 points. It says in the 50s verses on the Guru, if with things really given, your wife and children, and if with your life, you should always rely on the Master who gave you your commitments. Needless to say, do so with your fickle possessions. And this involves bathing him, anointing him, massaging him, wrapping him up, cleaning him, nursing him when he is ill and so forth, sick and so forth, and talking about his good qualities. Positive qualities, this consists of practicing the the benefits of reliance. The drawbacks of not relying. If you make someone your spiritual teacher and then back off in your reliance on him, a lot of illnesses and negative forces will harm you in this life and future lives. You will have to experience immeasurable suffering of the lower realms. And then there is a quotation from the 50 verses on Guru devotion and also commentary on the difficult points of the black opponents of Yama. So apart from the positive qualities that have not yet arisen, do not arise, and those that have arisen deteriorate and vanish. If you rely on non-virtuous spiritual friends and bad companions, your positive qualities will also diminish, your faults will increase, and there will be undesirable results. Therefore, it was taught that this should be avoided in every way. Summary of the meaning of these points. Next, switch to Lamrim Chemo, page number 92, chapter 5. It says chapter 5, a brief indication of how to sustain the meditation. How to sustain the meditation has two paths, the actual way of sustaining the meditation, and there are refuting misconceptions about meditation. The actual way to sustaining the meditation, the actual way of sustaining meditation is in two parts. What to do during the actual meditation session, what to do in the in-between meditation sessions. What to do during the meditation sessions. Actual meditation session is divided into three phases: the preparation, the actual session, and the conclusion. So the preparation, the six aspects of the preparation are the activities of settling pa. Therefore, clean well the place where you are staying and neatly arrange the representations of the Buddha's body, speech, and mind. And number four is, imagine that seated in the space before you are the gurus of this vast and profound lineage. So then visualize the field for accumulating the collections of merit and sublime wisdom. Number five, the cooperative conditions for the production of the path in your mind are accumulation of a collection, which are the favorable conditions, purification of your mind from obscurations with unfavorable conditions. So with regard to this merit field, you can instantaneously visualize that the merit field arises instantaneously, and there's no visualization of wisdom beings descending and so forth. You're also sealing the pledge beings. But with regard to the philosophical view of emptiness, you should at least have, when with kind, in connection with Tantra, Of course, you should meditate on emptiness and then dissolve everything into emptiness. And then from within the state of emptiness, you have the emergence of the deities and the gurus. From within the state of emptiness, where the mind is totally absorbed in emptiness, and this mind arises in the form of the guru and deities. And so this has the special significance of relating yourself to the resultant goal of enlightenment, and then you view all these experiences as bliss, and whatever appears is empty, and within that emptiness there is blissful experience. So as it is said in the prayer of Guhyasamaja, you should engage in the four session guru yoga practice. And so the practice of taking the three states of death, death, intermediate state, and rebirth into the three kayas, Dharmakaya, Sambhogakaya, and Nirmanakaya. And so these prayers, as said in the Guhyasamaja prayer by Lama Tsongkhapa, are marvelous. And all the Tibetan Buddhist traditions, Sajjen Nyingma, Kagyun, Gelug, and Chonang, have actually written these great texts. It's almost like everything that we need for our practice could relish are there, prepared by them. And then for the philosophical tradition of Chittamatra and Vibhashika, we have the five great texts written by Master Tsongkhapa, such as the Sutra that teach text to this differentiating between definitive and provisional interpretive meanings, and then commentary to Madhyamaka Avatara, commentary to Madhyamaka Karika, and so forth. And Lhaktong Chemo and Lhaktong and then we have the other teachings and text of the Tantra, Guhyasamaja Tantra, and then there is the Rimga Dentok, the complete practice of the five stages in one sitting by Lama Tsongkhapa actually summarizes these practices. And so, in other words, now we should visualize the merit field. You could have a very simple visualization without any elaborate visualization. For example, we could have Master Tsongkhapa visualize Master Tsongkhapa by using the prayer of Gaden Lhagyama, and visualize him as the embodiment of all the objects of refuge, and have single point of faith and concentration on him. So if you lack these cooperative conditions, it is extremely difficult to produce the path. Page number 94, the preparatory 5. Even if you take pains to sustain the meditations that are there, the substantial cause of the path, now you must purify your mind with the seven branches of worship, which comprise the crucial points for accumulation, for accumulating the collections and purifying the minds of obscurations. With respect to the seven branches of worship, the first, the branch of obeisance, includes a combination of physical, verbal, and mental obeisance. It is expressed in the five verses of the prayer of Samadabhadra. I bow down with clear mind, body, speech to all lions among humans, leaving none out, those who traverse the three times in the worlds of the ten directions, however many there are, may be. And this verse is a sincere, respectful, physical, verbal, and mental obeisance that does not simply conform to what others do. Do not take as your object of meditation the Buddhas of a single direction in the universe or of a single time. Rather, take all the conquerors who reside in all the 10 directions as well as those who have already visited this world previously, will visit it here in the future, and are appearing at present. The master Yeshe De explains in his commentary, even if you bow down to one Buddha, the merit is immeasurable. What need is there to mention the merit of bowing down while imagining that vast number of Buddhas? In regard to physical, verbal, and mental obeisance, physical obeisance is expressed by the second verse. And then imagine all the conquerors abiding in all directions and times as if you are actually perceiving them as there is a commentary by Master Tsongkhapa on where he says the parasol means the supreme amongst the parasols. Page number 97, the final verse from the seven limb prayer. The next verse expresses the sixth branch of worship, supplication. So, having gone through the seven limbs, it says on page 98, second last paragraph, while understanding the meaning of the words of these verses in this way, slowly recite them as indicated without distraction. Once you do this, you will have an immeasurable mass of merit. You accumulate the collections of merit and sublime wisdom, the favorable conditions. Favorable conditions through performing the five branches of obeisance, offering, rejoicing, imploring, and supplication. Through confession, you clear away the obscurations, which are the unfavorable conditions, cultivating delight in the virtue that you have done, which is part of rejoicing. You will increase your virtues. And then it says you should make a mandala offering. So, once you have pictured in your mind the objects of the mandala and to have offered the mandala, make the following supplication many times with strong aspiration. So this prayer that you say is said to be a prayer for fulfilling the three great purposes. So please bless me, all living bless all living beings, and so forth. And ending with, please bless us to quell all inner and outer obstacles. Actual session, how to sustain the meditation in general. So that which is known as meditation. Now here, with regard to the term meditation in Tibetan, it has the meaning of kwamba, which means to familiarize oneself, to familiarize with something. And so when it becomes the instrumental case of the word, the term in Tibetan is gom. And showing familiarity with it is kwamba. So we say there's my mind, but within this mind there are many different thoughts going on, many different, we have discursive thoughts. And sometimes when we want to think about something, the mind doesn't actually turn that way, whereas when we don't want to think about something, the mind actually wanders towards that. And this is because of our unruly, undisciplined mind, with full of negative emotions. And so this mind, whether it has a beginning or not, we should say that a mind actually has a substantial cause, which is a mind, and material things have their substantial cause, which are material. And so with regard to the substantial cause of mind or matter, they have their own respective substantial causes. So both the internal experiences of the mind, subjective mind, and the external phenomena that we actually interact with, both change. So this change comes about because of the cause which actually brings about that thing, the mind or the external things. And therefore, when we say whatever is produced is necessarily impermanent, that makes sense. So when we say something is produced, it is it shows that the thing is brought about. And whereas when we talk about impermanence, it shows how things disintegrate. And so things, if we don't give thought to it, then when we think about these, when we don't think about these things, we don't see that impermanent nature of things. When we say, oh, something is arising and something is disintegrating, we don't think about the change going on. So the changes that go on in our mind, for example, if some change happens in 10 years' time, of course, every year that change has to, that the thing has to go through the change. And within a year, the thing has to change every month. And in each month, every week, and in each week, every day, and every day, and each hour, and each minute, and each second, and so forth. So things don't stay, even for a moment. So we're talking about here the subtle impermanence of things. Gross or very coarse impermanence can happen when something meets with an abrupt kind of an unfavorable condition that puts an end to it. Therefore, whatever arises is subject to disintegration because of its cause. And that cause is the substantial cause.
And therefore, for mind, we should have a substantial cause, which is a mind. So this is something we can say is because of nature. And like water has the nature of being a fluid. And the fact that we have experiences of pleasure and pain is also nature. And the fact that we have the wish not to have suffering but to have happiness is nature. So, when we there are four reasonings or principles with which we check things. First, we have to use the logical arguments. And that is actually based on the principle of relativity and principle of functionality of things. And that, in turn, is based on the nature, the principle of nature of things. So these are the four principles. We are here, when we talk about nature here, we are not talking about the emptiness as such, but but the fact that things have their own identity and nature. So ignorance has been with us since time beginningless, and we are so much habituated with it, but the opposite of it, perhaps we may have some acquaintance with it in the previous lives, but it seems that we are actually coming out of the slumber of ignorance in this life. So we by seeing the shortcomings of these negative emotions or the faulty emotions, and then we should try to increase the countermeasures of them, just as we do physical trainings and gain very flexibility in the body and physical skills over a long period of time, training physically. And similarly, we take years, months, and so forth. Similarly, this has to be the case with the mind when, in order to develop positive qualities in the mind. We should show familiarity with it. And the mind's nature is such that once you familiarize with something, that experience actually comes along with you later on with effortlessly. So it is the basis, a stable basis for developing the qualities. So the qualities that we develop in our sixth mind, in the mind, once you are familiar with them enough, then we don't need to put extra effort to bring about those experiences. But with the sensory perceptions, of course, sometimes we may have to repeat the same the training. So recently, I was in Kerala, and in Bangalore, and I met with Christian practitioners and also one Hindu Swami, and who was 106 years old. So when I saw him, I also felt that perhaps I could also stay more than 100 years. So I felt that there is hope for me to live more than 100 years. When I see people of my age, 70s, in their 70s or 80s, it seems that I look much more younger. Now, but I have this white gray eyebrows, and like Gaden Trirambuche also. So what I was saying was that the qualities that we develop based on our mind are going to be stable.
the material development, of course. However, progress we may make, but there is a limit to them. This very body that we have, which is material, also have to be left behind. Even if we may live 100 years, this will be left behind. But with regard to the mind, the qualities will increase further and further as we develop the qualities based on the subtler level of the mind. For example, the mind during this dreaming state, if we can use it to actually sustain our meditation and virtuous practices, it's going to be much more powerful than doing so during waking state. So when we do that in dream, for example, cultivation of bodhicitta, we could be actually crying in dreams while we dream. And so if you could use the mind itself, and it develops based more on the subtler level of the mind, it's going to be much more lasting to carry over into the future lives because of the stable basis of the mind itself, whereas the sensory perceptions are not a stable basis. But within the sixth mental consciousness, we have the mind, the consciousness, the waking state, and dreaming, deep sleep, and then there's during the faint when we become unconscious and so forth. So, what goes into the state of omniscient mind is not the gross sensory perceptions and the gross consciousnesses, but the subtlest mind. And therefore, we have to show familiarity with, we have to actually cultivate familiarity with the experiences of meditation. So, for example, in the case of the students in the monastic institutions here, in the beginning, you study collected topics. In the beginning, when you study the collected topics, you had, of course, difficulty. You face difficulty even to learn the procedure of debate. But then as you get more and more acquainted with it, after a while, it comes out rather easily for you to argue. Make your arguments. And so, as Shantideva says, through familiarization, there's nothing that doesn't become easier. And so, if you, as you keep putting effort and make yourself familiar with the practices, then they become very easy to do as time goes by. So, Solomon is commenting on this paragraph on page 99 under how to sustain meditation in general. Thus, meditation aims to bring this mind which gives rise to all faults and flaws under control, and then it aims to make it serviceable. Serviceability means that you can direct your mind as you wish toward a virtuous object of meditation. So, that needs familiarization with the practice of meditation. And then, next paragraph. And therefore, at the end of this page, therefore, from the beginning, firmly determine the definite order and enumeration of whatever object of meditation you wish to sustain. Then strengthen your will by repeatedly thinking in this way. So whatever you do, we do them in order to cultivate happiness in our mind, joy. We are not striving for nothing. So it is
with Buddhism, it may be with other religious traditions as well. So on the basis of this mind that we have, we are talking about lasting, ultimate happiness as our goal to achieve. So with regard to the ultimate goal, this verse comes from the Goya Samaja text. It says, union is not actually bestowed upon us by anyone. It doesn't come as a gift to us, but we have to actually attain it ourselves. And Buddhahood is not actually not a belonging of anyone. But we have the subtle innate mind and wind energy within ourselves, this subtle body, speech, and mind within ourselves, this innate clear light is within ourselves, and when we are able to transform it into the path leading to Buddhahood, then the obscurations or the defilements that are in our mind stream naturally will subside and will be eliminated, and then you only remain with the subtlest mind itself, which actually becomes the Buddha's omniscient mind, where you are in the meditation session and simultaneously you are in post-meditation session. There are simultaneously there, and therefore your mind, body, speech are of one taste. So you have to familiarize your mind in a gradual manner. So Buddhahood is not owned by anyone, as the Goya Samaja text says. But when you see the reality of yourself, when that reality within yourself becomes manifest, when you actually realize your potential to become a Buddha fully, completely, then that the Buddhas call Buddhahood. So the text from which this verse comes from is called Sungjuk Selwa, clarifying the union. And so we should actually investigate the teachings, and then after having done that, we should actually familiarize our mind with whatever we have analyzed and come to conclusion. So in the fourth chapter of Abhisamaya Alamkara, there is mention of the two aspects, the aspects of objects and the aspects of the objects forming on our mind. So Kunkin Lama Jaya Shepa actually explains very in great detail about these aspects. And so with regard to meditation, there are many different types of meditation. So one aspect is to familiarize your mind with it and to become closer to the experience. And once you become familiar and closer to it, then you actually focus your mind single-pointedly on it. Of course, that doesn't come through an analytical meditation. Until you actually reach a very high level of progression on the path, where it is possible to have this union of combining and insight through analysis. But for now, at our stage, we need to focus, we need to develop this, or cultivate the concentration, single-pointed concentration, focusing on whatever we have become familiar with and become closer to in terms of meditation. So how to, page number 100, how to sustain the meditation specifically. First, reflect on the benefits of relying on the teacher, such as quickly attaining Buddhahood, and drawbacks of not relying on teachers, such as giving rise to suffering in this and future lives. Then think many times, and if with an attitude of restraint, I will never allow myself to conceive of faults in my guru. After considering any of the guru's good qualities that you know, such as ethical discipline, concentration, wisdom, and being learned, meditate on them until you produce a faith that has the aspect of mental clarity. Then, in accordance with the sutras clearly cited earlier, contemplate how your guru's kindness has been and will be helpful to you. Meditate on that until you've developed respect for it. And then, with regard to meditation, meditate in this way during the four sessions, pre-dawn, morning, afternoon, etc. So, first begin with a short session, and then as you become more and more adept and to the meditation, then you can extend the duration, make it longer. Otherwise, it's going to make you feel bored, right? If you try to stay in meditation for long, right from the beginning. So when you meditate, when your meditation has become somewhat stable, lengthen the session. In all the sessions, make your practice free from the faults of being either too strict or excessively relaxed, and thereby sustain your meditation. In this way, you will have few obstacles and will overcome problems such as overtiredness, laxity, and lethargy. So, it's always good to relax, and then you should go into meditation, and not only just. So I have friends who have told me that after being in meditation for several years, they have actually found themselves to have become duller in their mind. And so that shows that they have actually fallen into some pitfall in the meditation. So there are, of course, in Chinese culture, they have meditation, like So I've heard that after having meditated for a long time, they actually find themselves to have become their mind have become duller, and that those show that they have actually engaged in the wrong methods of meditation. So this alertness in our mind should not be lost through meditation. If that happens, then the mind that is so alert and so called active in our mind now, if it becomes less alert, then if you lose this alertness, then that shows that there has been laxity actually developing and collecting in you, increasing in you. So the condensed presentation of how to sustain meditation. The actual way to sustain meditation, following the life story of Tsenlingpa, you should clean your dwelling and arrange. So this comes under the title or subtitle, what to do in preparation.
you should clean your dwelling and arrange representations of exalted body, speech, and mind. And so it talks about having visualizing the two lineages of extensive lineage and profound lineage of view. So I wonder how the term that we use to say the lineage of the blessings, when did that actually start, use of that? And so the lineages, the teachings from that has come, that have come from the extensive lineage and profound lineage, are what we should practice mainly. So the practice of blessing through the practice of, or the lineage of practice of blessings. I wonder when that term actually came into use. We cannot have something which is called the profound lineage of the view, and then the lineage of the extensive path, and then separately, and then have another, a third set of thing called the practice lineage of the blessings. So all the teachings of the great masters like Nagarjuna and so forth actually transform our minds. And so without the basic teachings of the masters like Nagarjuna and so forth, it's very difficult for us to have the tantric experiences. And so, of course, one's faith and devotion to one's guru is, of course, essential. But we have to know the reason for that, and also the purpose, and how to actually show that reverence and devotion to the guru, like taking the medicine. So it said that without the without devotion and faith, it's very difficult for the stream of blessings from the mountain of our gurus is difficult to enter us. So Gongdan Rinpoche says that the teachings which are called, which are meant for very specific disciples, would be very difficult to have any effect on someone who, for whom it's not suitable. So there is a lineage called Lapchen Jyu, which is to say the great practice lineage. So it may, there may be something. So His Holiness was trying to say that whether there is this term called the lineage of practice and blessing of the practice is something that Lama Tsongkhapa has used anyway in his text or not. So, of course, we cannot also have something called Lapchen Jyu without, which has nothing to do with the profound and the extensive lineages also. So visualize the merit field in the space before you. And it is exceedingly difficult for paths to arise in your continuum if the favorable conditions for their arising, the collections have not been accumulated, and their adverse conditions, the obscurations, have not been purified. Therefore, you need to purify the mind by means of seven limb practice, which brings together the key points of accumulation and purification. With regard to the limb for prostration, combining the three doors is set out in the prayer of the good conduct, in some of the Bhadra prayer in a single stanza. So with regard to the physical prostration, we have the fully stretched body prostration. And when we have the short form of physical prostration, the simple form is
by touching our foreheads, two knees, and two palms on the ground. And sometimes people don't actually touch their palm on the ground, but they actually form a fist, which is not right. But people who have a beer belly would have difficulty actually bending their body and making the prostration. So when you do your prostration, the fingers have to touch together and then close your palms together like this and then form a hollow and put the two thumbs inside the hollow. So this has the two palms putting the two thumbs inside the folded finger has the significance of the combination, symbolizes the combination of method and wisdom. So when you, sometimes when we say the Tremlin prayer, some people don't recite the text and actually don't show the physical gesture of making prostration as if saying that, oh, I know this prayer well. So, of course, if you put your palms together in this gesture, and then if the disciplined masters come to you and scold you, then, of course, you should not put them together. But it's better to actually bring the two palms together and form this lotus shape while saying the seven limb prayer. So if you don't do that, but just put your hands together, just like relaxing, it's almost like disregarding the practice. So there is, of course, physical prostration. So sometimes when we say some prayers every day on a daily basis, then we become quite spoiled with regard to the practice of Dharma and not do these simple things. And when I was giving teaching in Gyume one time, and during one lunchtime I saw from my window from the window of my room, and there were monks with huge wooden balls. They have they take their meal and tea in those big wooden balls. Whereas beside them there were lay people who had smaller cups, and so they got less tea in their smaller cups, but they were saying their prayers, grace, before taking the tea, whereas the monks who had huge wooden bowls were not saying the grace. So we have to say, when we say prayers, and the Heart Sutra or the Seven Limb Prayer, we have to think about the meaning of those prayers as well. And then with regard to the Seven Limb Prayer, if we actually do these physical gestures of showing respect, it would be also good. And think along the meaning of these lines that we say as well. So I just wanted to say this in connection with the physical prostration. So physical prostration is set. That next is mental prostration is set forth in the single stanza. On top of each atom are Buddhas equaling all the atoms. Residing amidst the Buddha's children, I visualize the entire sphere of phenomena as being completely filled with victors in this way. So, and then verbal prostration is set forth in the single stanza with oceans of inexhaustible eulogies and so forth. And so it says here, from each of the bodies,
and in bodies, innumerable heads emanate, and from each of the heads, again, innumerable tongues that sing inexhaustible eulogies of the object's positive qualities to sweet melodies. So perhaps it's not so necessary to visualize all these heads and mouths and tongues, because if you have too many mouths and tongues, and then maybe you won't be able to pronounce the words. Here, melody is praised, and the organs that is their causes are the tongues. The word oceans refers to Lot. And then the next is surpassable offerings. Surpassable offerings are set down in these two stanzas. Delightful flower, beginning with the delightful flower in heaven and garlands, musical instruments and so forth, and ending in I offer to you the victors. And then next, unsurpassable. Unsurpassable offerings are set forth in the single stanza. Offerings, unsurpassable and vast, visualized for all the victors by the power of my faith and good conduct, I prostrate and offer them to all the victors. So since the surpassable ones are the offerings of worldly beings, this here is everything good that is emanated by powerful beings such as bodhisattvas. The last two lines are to be joined to all the previous sets of two in order to complete them. They indicate the motivation for the prostrations and offerings as well as their objects. The confession of negativity sets forth in this single stanza, whatever negativity I have done with my body, speech, and likewise my mind, overwhelmed by detachment, anger, and ignorance, all these I confess one by one before you. And then rejoicing is set forth in this single stanza. In all the merit of all the victors of the ten directions, the Buddha's children and solitary realizers, the learners and no more learners, and of each and every migrating beings, I rejoice. So His Holiness is making commento again in the context of the physical prostration, where it says, I put my palms together and make a prayer. And so requesting the wheel of Dharma to be turned is set forth in the single stanza. You who are lights for the world in the ten directions, who by means of stages of enlightenment attained unimpeded Buddhahood, I exhort all of you, my saviors, to turn the unsurpassable wheel. Supplication is set forth in the single stanza. So requesting the Buddhas not to pass away is set forth in this single stanza. Those who intend to show how to pass beyond sorrow, with folded hands I supplicate you to remain for eons equaling the particles of the universes for the benefit and happiness of all migrating beings. The limb of dedication is set forth in the single stanza. Whatever slight virtue I have accumulated by prostrating, offering, confessing, rejoicing, exhorting, and supplicating, I dedicate all of it to the great enlightenment. So this is a comment in relation to the Mount Meru, which is quite difficult for me to accept. So in our when we study logic and epistemology, we actually object to certain assertions of the non-Buddhist traditions by saying that if such and such thing were to exist, they should be accessible to our perceptions, and reasoning should also be able to confirm them and so forth. If something is visible or something is accessible, then they should be seen and so forth. Whereas while we object to others, we also have to actually accept the same logic ourselves. So there, with regard to Mount Meru, there are different versions in different sutras and between sutras and tantras. So of course we say that we may say that Mount Meru is not something accessible to us, but the shadow of Mount Meru is something that we actually experience. So while experiencing the shadow and not the source of that shadow, it's quite difficult.
to hold on to such position. When astronauts go up in the space and look down to the world, and they don't see any Mount Meru. It's not just the astronauts who go up into space, but any human person, if we go up there, then we won't be able to see. So if Lama Tsongkhapa says, if you go against reasoning, then the person who asserts things which go against reasoning cannot be an authoritative, an authentic person. If that is the case, then if something like that is true, then how much more would it be true to say that something that, if we go against something that is accessible to the sensory perception, and if we can't actually see that, then how can we actually assert that Mount Meru is there? So Mount Meru is supposed to be something that is accessible to us, but since it does not, we cannot see, or we cannot perceive it, then we should actually not assert it. But having said that, making mandala offering is not something that we should reject, or because we are talking, when we make mandala offering, we also imagine the 3,000 world systems that are a part of the karmic environment that we, of our own karma as well. And therefore, so don't say that it's really pitiable that His Holiness is not accepting the Mount Meru. And don't say that the Dalai Lama is not a Buddhist. I've been saying this for a long time now, and that Buddha didn't come to the world to measure the world or to calculate the distance and so forth, but or to establish that the world is flat and the sun and the moon are surrounding or orbiting the earth and so forth. So when I was in Kerala or somewhere, I saw seven horses drawing a chariot in front of them with the sun. And so we call the sun that which is drawn by seven horses, the lord over the seven horses. So that seems to be what we find in Abhidharma, seems to be something that even non-Buddhist traditions believe in. But we have to use reason more than just resort to scriptural authority right away. So with regards to the teaching, the Four Noble Truths and so forth, no other followers of any other tradition can actually object to the teaching of the Buddha. But with regard to the minor things like Mount Meru and so forth, we should not worry. So, having said that Mount Meru does not exist, you should not think. I usually say that the students do not stop making their mandala offerings to me. You should still continue to make mandala offerings. In 1969, when the American Apollo landed on the moon, the astronauts landed on the moon, and then they took pictures. I actually showed pictures to some geishas. And then recently, America also sent something to Mars, and actually took pictures of it, and they actually found indications of water on Mars. So when I was a child, I could see through telescope how shadows on the moon, shadows of craters or mounds in hills on the moon actually hills actually cast shadows on it. And after having seen that, I actually showed this to my two tutors, Yongzhen Ling Rinpoche and Tejang Rinpoche. I told, I showed them, and they also found that that was true. That the moon does not have its own light. So I showed those pictures that were taken from the Apollo mission of the moon, the pictures from there, and Geshe Rabten told me, oh, perhaps it's not the moon, maybe somewhere nearby, in some kind of a neighboring planet or something close to the moon. So I'm not claiming to be learned, but after having heard people many times and also seen for myself the evidences, therefore I say these things. So with regards to the emptiness, if you wrongly perceive it, then you create lots of negative karma. So if with regard to that, this kind of thing, such a profound teaching on emptiness could be actually checked, then there's no need, nothing wrong in checking the minor teachings of the Buddha. Of course, there are some, in Tantra, there are many things that are actually taught, and then there are descriptions of the different parts of our body as analogous to Mount Meru and so forth. For example, the spine, the spinal cord is said to be representing or symbolizing the Mount Meru and so forth. So there are many symbolisms in Tantra. So in Buddhism, we say from karma the various worlds arise, and in the Hinduism they say everything, all the worlds come from have come from the Brahma as the creator. So sometimes when I reject the existence of Mount Meru, people might actually doubt about the teaching of the Buddha. That's not should not be the case. So what to do during actual meditation session? How to sustain the meditation in general? Meditation on the path, as it will be explained here, serves to make you fit to utilize any virtuous object to your wish. Moreover, if you attend to this and that observed object with the thought to take merely this number of virtuous observed objects in any order you wish, nothing will come of it. And having gone wrong from the beginning, your spiritual practice will continue to be faulty throughout your life. How to sustain the meditation of this context? You should first think about the benefits of reliance and about the faults of non-reliance. Then repeatedly resolve never to allow your mind to get lost in conceiving faults in the guru and think of the qualities like ethics and meditative civilization that you yourself have perceived in him, cultivating the confidence that is at mind, having the aspect of faith until it arises. Then you should consider, in accordance with the above quotations from the Sutra collection, the instances of beneficial kindness that you received and are still receiving, and sincerely cultivate respect until it arises. What to do at the end of meditation session? by means of prayer of good conduct and aspiration in 70 verses, the accumulated virtue should be dedicated with strong determination to the temporary and ultimate aspirations. And so this part is finished. And next is what to do during the period between sessions. It's now 11:30. So it's time for lunch. So we'll stop here. Sanje shindo mikte pyo waye, chogun namda shingla chobarish.